Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm very pleased to have in studio Phil Arno. Phil is the owner of WBBZ Television. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Sandy.
Now, you have a long history of being in helicopters over the L.A. area. What did you do and how long did you do it?
I was a photographer and reporter that worked out of news helicopters, in the back of the news helicopters in Los Angeles. I worked for more than 12 years in helicopters and probably had more than 10,000 hours.
Wow.
In the back of helicopters. So primarily in A-STARS, that's the helicopter of choice out there. The Sikorsky 76 that crashed was actually in our hangar. I was in that helicopter a number of times.
Yeah, it's an impressive looking helicopter.
It's a terrific helicopter. Cost about $13 million new. It's very impressive. As a matter of fact, if you want to know what that helicopter looked like, and the inside and the outside, look at the last scene in the original movie Jurassic Park, because that was that helicopter.
Oh, really? A couple of people on my text wondered, because there were nine people on it, if it were overloaded. I understand it can seat 12, so it was actually under capacity.
Yeah, it depends on how it's configured.
Yeah.
The one that I was used to sitting in, basically you can two pilots up front, and then you can put four facing forward and four facing backward in the back.
Now, I have flown in a helicopter over the exact route that they took, because we took some people from Dallas to Las Vegas and then from Vegas to L.A. For the Rose Bowl and the Rose Parade. And I was just in awe of the topography, the land. But it's all hills. And do you think that fog, we're going to find out in about a year probably, do you think that fog was there when they even took off? Because I can't imagine them taking off if the fog was already present.
In Los Angeles, that's routine. I mean, being a weather guy in Los Angeles is boring, because every day it's the same thing. You have a marine layer that comes in from the ocean, and it's basically a low cloud. It's fog, and it burns off, around noon or 1 o'clock, and everything. And then you have sunny skies, and you would never know that it was cloudy or foggy earlier in the day. But in the morning, you have that marine layer, and it goes inland probably 5 or 10 miles, and it is zero visibility early on.
Wow.
It really is bad. And in the hills there, I've flown over that spot hundreds of times, and I can't begin to tell you how unfortunate it is when something like this happens. The NTSB is going to take a year to file a report, and that's standard. They always do that, just because that's what the bureaucracy does. They have to have every T crossed and every I dotted. If you're a pilot, if you have experience in this, you look at that scene, and you have a pretty good idea of what happened. He was going pretty quick, pretty fast, and he was in low visibility. He shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't have been going that fast. And they flew into the side of the hill. They flew in and skimmed the side of the hill. You could tell by the wreckage, the tail boom broke off, and the pattern of debris that was, if you remember the camera shot to the right, is a whole bunch of small debris.
Right.
That's the direction they were going in. The bigger debris where the tail boom was, that's where they were coming from.
Oh.
When the tail boom broke off, it was sudden. Nobody knew what was coming. It was over in a split second.
Were they on instruments or visual?
They were on what you call a special VFR, and they shouldn't have been, because a special VFR assumes that you have limited visibility, not zero, but limited. Many times in the news helicopters, we fly, you couldn't take off if you were in a fixed-wing airplane unless you were on an instrument flight
instrument
rules.
Rating, okay.
And when we needed to cover a story, you could ask for a special VFR if you were in a helicopter, because you could go with less visibility, because you could go 10 miles an hour. You didn't need the extra speed of a fixed wing. So you could operate under different rules. That being the case, you did need a quarter or a half mile visibility to go special VFR. These guys, in this circumstance, they had probably less than a couple hundred feet visibility.
Oh, man. Well, the helicopter pilots in the L.A. area cooperate with each other. I know in Dallas, when one guy is in Fort Worth, the other guy is in Dallas, and they swap information. Is it a cooperative effort, or is it dog-eat-dog? Everybody can get what they can get.
Oh, it's cooperative. Yeah, it's a small community of pilots, and they have a special frequency that we tune to.
If you showed up at the airport and there was fog, I assume that the pilot would have the final say as to whether you go up or not.
All the time,
yeah.
Absolutely. Your life and your passengers' lives are in your hand. I don't care whether it's a helicopter or a fixed wing. You have the final say.
Is there any pressure from those above you to fly when you're uncomfortable because of any kind of circumstances?
There is some pressure, but usually it boils down to a safety issue. And if you explain things the right way, there usually isn't a problem. I'll give you an example. The Alaska Air crash that happened right off of the coast of Point Magoo. I covered that story. It was in 2000, I believe, or 1999, and there was an airliner that went down right off the coast of just outside of Los Angeles, and it was about 20 miles or 15 miles off the shore. During the day, we went out with the helicopters, and we covered the story, and it lasted into the night after dark. And several of the helicopters, which were single engine, expressed concern that they didn't want to go out that far over the ocean at night under those circumstances. There was pressure to cover the story. But when it came down to it, the management was not going to force a pilot to go in under those circumstances if the pilot thought it wasn't a safe idea.
See, ideas go through your head, me not being a pilot or anything like that. I'm thinking, okay, here's the crash site. There's the ocean. Why in really deep fog wouldn't a pilot choose to fly over the ocean, not too far out, obviously, because you're not going to hit anything?
Normally, that's what we do.
Oh, is that
yeah,
what
that
do?
What we would. He was coming in. See, he was coming up from John Wayne Airport, because Kobe lived down in Newport Beach, and I little background in Los Angeles. If you can, you're going to get around the best way in a helicopter. I mean, that was something,
sure.
Because even on a weekend, there's a lot of traffic, and things are spread out. Newport Beach, where he lived, is probably 40 miles from up in Thousand Oaks, and it would have taken him, under those circumstances, in a car, probably 2 hours to get to where.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For 40 miles?
Yep.
Wow.
So it made sense from his point of view to take that helicopter. He had the wherewithal to do it, and the way they went was over land. He didn't go out over the ocean. He went up through the basin and up past LAX, and he was inland, so he was away from the marine layer. But when he came close to the destination, which was Thousand Oaks, he was back close to the shore again.
Wow.
And he couldn't avoid it.
We'll be back with Phil Arnold. Phil spent a lot of time in LA in helicopters and kind of explaining as best we can what we can explain on News Radio 930 WBEN. I only have a cold. I've not been to China. I have a cold. I got it on Saturday. I'm sure it'll take a few days. Very happy and pleased to have Phil Arnold with us. Phil owns WBBZ, and spent years on the West Coast in the L.A. area in helicopters, knows the area. But your first helicopter ride was here.
Yeah, I don't want to date myself, but I guess I will.
Sure.
Going way, way back. If you ever watched MASH on WBBC, they use an old Bell 47 with a big bubble.
The bubble.
That's the first helicopter I ever rode in was that kind of a helicopter. And I was assigned, I was working for Channel 7, and I was assigned to cover the traffic when Rich Stadium had its debut.
The debut of Rich Stadium.
1973. The Washington Redskins versus the Buffalo Bills, the very first game in that stadium, and the traffic was backed up from the stadium all the way to the Youngman Expressway. And I remember the game, our photographer on the ground didn't get to the game until the third quarter.
Oh, it's a good thing you were there.
Sammy Brunetto.
Oh, Sammy, yeah. Sure. I bet all of your employees now are figuring out how old you are.
Yeah. I was only 10 at the time. So
now you graduated to Los Angeles in a hurry. How long were you in the L.A. area?
Oh, I was 20 years. I spent 20 years out there. Yeah.
Do you know if that Sikorsky was a rental or was it Kobe's helicopter? Or?
The company that handled the contract for the TV stations that I worked at. Also had the contract for Kobe to begin with. So he flew out of the same area that I did at Van Nuys. Then one of the pilots took the contract and went to Long Beach, and Kobe went with that pilot because he liked that pilot. And so I don't know. There's some question as to whether Kobe bought the helicopter and then leased it back to the company in Long Beach, whether it was his helicopter. But it was a charter company out of Long Beach. That's where the helicopter was based.
And you say, you know, because of the traffic conditions in Los Angeles, oftentimes it makes sense to have a helicopter. I've always said that if I were a rich person and I had a choice between like my own jet and my own helicopter, I'd take a helicopter every day because of the flexibility it has.
It's they're tremendous machines for the purpose. That particular helicopter, the one that was in our hangar, was owned by Ron Burkle, who is a very, very rich grocery store owner. He's in politics a lot, and he leased that back to the helicopter company. And we used to fly Liz Taylor in and out. There are a lot of celebrities.
Oh, really?
Bruce Willis used to come in and out.
Clint Eastwood, you mentioned.
We shared a hangar with Clint Eastwood. Warner Brothers bought him a helicopter.
They just bought him
They
one.
Bought it. They said, here, have, you know,
you're a nice
good
guy.
Boy. Merry Christmas. And,
wow.
Yeah, he was learning when I knew him, and he was very enthusiastic.
What I learned from our pilot in Dallas, Dick Siegel, he had 17,000 hours when I met him, and he was a test pilot for Bell. So he was safety, safety, safety. But he taught me some things. He said, you know, airplanes want to fly. They say, come on, I want to fly. He said, helicopters don't. They don't want to fly. But the constant maintenance on a helicopter, it's very expensive. But at any one time, most of the things on the helicopter are either new or they've just been replaced. It's like you're flying a new helicopter all the time.
They're constantly in the shop.
Yeah.
For every hour that you fly them, they're in the shop for an hour. I mean, that's why they're so expensive to fly. I mean, the news helicopters, they basically cost the company maybe $600 or $700 per hour to fly. It's just a tremendously expensive operation because of the maintenance.
I know. In my budget, as program director at WBAP in Dallas, the helicopters were in my budget and very, very expensive. And we flew 6 hours a day, three in the morning, three in the afternoon at least. And I used to use them for promotional things as well. So there was a big chunk of our budget went to helicopters.
Well, you know, and they're very – you talk about flying them. I'm a fixed-wing pilot. I've been a pilot since I was in high school. I've got a commercial license.
Well, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I've got about 3,000 hours.
Wow. Yeah. Hold on. You thought you knew Phil Arno. No. Can you stay for another segment?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Phil Arno, my friend, now that I know he's a pilot, maybe he'll take us up for a ride. We'll be back after this. And we are back with the Beach and Company. I'm Sandy Beach. Phil Arno is with us. Phil is the owner of WBBZ and has spent a lot of time in a helicopter over L.A. And we're kind of trying to get a little clarity of what might have happened it's educated from us, and he is educating us. And this is the most information I've heard of any of the interviews I saw on television, so I'm really glad you're here with us. You had a mishap over the Academy Awards one time in your helicopter. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was in the year 2000. We were covering the Academy Awards that was in the Shriner Auditorium, and it was we were over the red carpet, and the helicopter was at 1,200 feet, and we were ready to go live. And the helicopter experienced a hydraulic failure, and it's almost like losing power steering in your car. And that had happened in helicopters twice before when I was in helicopters, and it's a manageable emergency. That's what they call it. The pilots are trained to recognize it and handle it, and you know it's difficult, but it's not something that should be a problem. And like I said, it happened twice before in helicopters that I was in, and we went back and landed with no problem. Well, this particular time, it was at night. It was at 10 o'clock at night, and it happened suddenly, as it always does. And the pilot was a woman who was probably 5 feet 2 inches tall and 90 pounds, and she didn't recognize what had happened. She at first thought it was an engine failure, and she didn't react properly, so she lost control, and the helicopter started spinning out of control. And we were losing altitude. If you've ever seen any footage of helicopter crashes, when they start to spin and go out of control, it's not a good thing.
No.
It doesn't have a good result. And we were spinning out of control for what seemed like an eternity. And that's when you start thinking about things.
Yeah.
That's when you start thinking, this is not good.
Not good.
Not good.
No, not good.
And we lost probably 500 feet, maybe 600 feet. We went down to about 700 feet.
Oh, man.
And she finally got control of it. And I asked her, the first words out of my mouth is, you want me to help you look for a place to land?
Yeah.
And she was very shaken, and she said, no, I think I can make it back to the airport. And now I'm a pilot, and my first instinct is get on the ground.
Yeah, instantly.
Get on the ground and then figure things out.
Yeah.
But she had enough to handle, and I didn't want to rattle her any more than she already was. So I said, okay, if there's anything I can do, let me know. You know, I can handle the radios for you, whatever you want me to do.
That's pretty calm for somebody that's descended that quickly.
Well, she said, all right, let's you know, go back to Van Nuys, which was another question mark in my mind because that was the farthest airport. Santa Monica was 4 miles away. Van Nuys was 15 miles away over the hills.
Oh, wow, really?
Even Burbank was closer. That was about 10 miles away. But I wasn't going to argue with her. This was not the time to argue. And Lawrence Welk III, who was flying the Channel 2 helicopter, he had seen what happened. And he called her on the radio and asked her if she was okay. Is there anything he could do? And he accompanied us in that helicopter handling the radio calls.
Oh, wow.
So we limped back. We went over the Hollywood Hills, and we limped back to Van Nuys. And she now the normal procedure when you're in a situation like that in a helicopter, you want as much control of the helicopter as you can get and have, and so you want air going over the tail to keep it going straight, okay, because there's enough torque to try and spin you around, so you want to have that forward motion. A normal helicopter you can hover, but if you've got a problem, you want forward motion. So the procedure for landing in that situation is to almost land like a fixed wing airplane and glide it onto the runway. She didn't do that. She went back to the parking area and she slowed to a hover. And I had told her, I said, okay, like, you know, just use the runway. She said, no, I'm going to use the taxiway. And I said, well, that's 10,000 feet also. So, okay, just glide it onto the taxiway and, you know, do a nice run-on landing and we'll be fine.
Wow.
And she got to the taxiway. She got to her parking spot and she stopped. And we were about 3 feet off of the ground. And as soon as she stopped, forward momentum, the tail boom started to spin.
Oh, man.
And instead of dropping onto the ground from 3 feet, she pulled the collective and started to climb. And she climbed out of control, spinning.
Man.
And we climbed up to about 120 feet out of control before she finally lost it and was totally out of control, and it nosedived in from 120 feet.
Oh, my word. were you injured?
Well, I was, I did not have, in the back of the helicopter, they didn't have a shoulder harness. We had asked them for shoulder harnesses, but they said it was too expensive. It was $800 to put a shoulder harness in.
Oh, wow.
The pilot had a shoulder harness. She was well-equipped, and she got away with injuries that put her in the hospital for 6 months.
Oh, man.
I was in the hospital she was out of work for 6 months. She was in the hospital for 3 weeks. I was in the hospital for a month, and I was in a wheelchair for 3 years.
For 3 years in a wheelchair?
Yeah.
Wow. So, after that, did you ever have any thoughts of getting back in a helicopter? For any reason?
I haven't gotten into a helicopter, but I would do that again.
Wow.
The biggest takeaway from that is being able to trust somebody else in control.
Yeah.
That's when I'm flying myself around in my airplane, I have no problems flying. Even in an airliner, I get into an airliner and I have second thoughts because there's somebody else in control.
Yeah, surely.
Yeah.
Now, do you get any say at all as to who your pilot is when you're doing it on a regular day-by-day basis?
Not normally. When I was doing that, I had my favorite pilots that I trusted and knew, but you really didn't have whoever was assigned to take you up.
I know a lot of the guys in Vietnam that flew helicopters came into commercial aviation and stuff. You trust them. Nobody's shooting at you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, can you stay one more segment?
Sure.
Okay. You know what you should do on BBZ? You should put this in a presentation. Put it in a program because it's very interesting stuff.
There's a lot. Well, after 40 years of covering news, there's a lot of stories.
Wow. You could have ended up on the red carpet, Phil.
The Academy sent us a thank you note for not crashing on their carpet.
We'll be back with more with Phil Arno on News Radio 930 WBEN. Phil Arno is with us. Phil owns WBBZ, one of my favorite places. It's must-see TV. I love those shows that are on there. He was in a helicopter many hours, right in the same areas of L.A., all very, very hilly. I asked you while we're off the air, if he was flying on instruments, do instruments show you hills and dangers around you like that for as far as the height?
In the last 10 or 12 years, the avionics in aircraft have improved so much. It's like a moving map in your car. The map in display in the helicopter or in an aircraft will show terrain, and if it allows for your altitude, it knows what altitude you're at, and it knows the terrain that's around you. So if you're at the same altitude as the terrain, it'll show the terrain around you as being red, and that's a warning. You know, you're going towards hard, solid ground, okay? You have to climb.
Right.
If you're near the terrain, it's going to be yellow, and if you're safe and above the terrain, it's going to show it as green. Now, I can't imagine, I'm not familiar with the instrument panel as it was yesterday in that aircraft, but I cannot imagine an aircraft that sophisticated that didn't have a moving map that showed terrain awareness. It would just blow my mind that he didn't have that aware.
And maybe it's too simplistic a question, and pardon me if it is, but if I were a pilot, I would just try and find the highest terrain from between me and where I'm going and just fly above that.
Well, that would put you in the clouds, though,
and that
would have been illegal, and so that's why you.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, that's why they're low, is because he's trying to skirt, they call it scud running. He's trying to skirt under those clouds, and that, as long as he has visibility, it's legal. And some pilots, you know, they kind of push the edge. You know, they're in and out of the clouds. As long as you're going slow enough, you can kind of get away with it because you're losing visibility for a second here and a second there. You kind of go through it. But if you're going too fast, you lose that visibility, and then you come out and you're going too fast, you can't stop.
Oh, man.
You know, so it's a very dangerous thing to scud run under the circumstances. Something will, there'll be a tower in front of you or something that you're not familiar with. So you're really, you know, pushing the edge.
Remind me not to become a pilot. Here's one thing I don't
Well, there are bold pilots, and there are old pilots. There are no bold old pilots.
I listened to the conversation online between the tower and the helicopter. First of all, I could never be a pilot because I can't understand the thing they say. They print it so you can read it, but they speak fast, and some of them have accents, and you know, you might misinterpret something. You don't want to be a fool and have to keep asking them to repeat it.
Well, again, you don't want to waste the controller's time, especially in a place like Los Angeles. I flew out of Van Nuys for many years, and that's the busiest general aviation airport in the world. Okay,
wow.
So you don't want to waste their time by fumbling around with words on the radio. So you kind of it's almost like a language that's ordered so that you tell them the who, what, why, and where. When I call, I'm in the parking spot and I want to take off and go to what some destination. I will call the tower or the ground control, and I will tell them this is 7840 Yankee at the West End, taxi for takeoff with Alpha. Okay, that tells them who I am, where I am, that I want to taxi to the active runway for takeoff, and that I have Alpha, which is the airport information, which tells me what's the active runway, what's the weather, and what's the traffic pattern. And in that short burst that I, you know, mentioned, they have everything that they need to know that I have done what I need to do to prepare to take off.
Well, we recently had a fatality with Mark Crochet, well-known entrepreneur in Buffalo. And I thought at first when I saw his helicopter, that was a long trip to take on a helicopter like that. But you're telling me that's a really good helicopter, and it's a good one to travel in.
Yeah, it was a Robinson R66. It's a turbine helicopter. I've been into the Robinson plant down in Hawthorne. They started out making very inexpensive two-seaters, and then they built that company up, and they went to an R-44, which is a four-seater. And his helicopter was a 66, which is the same as the 44, only it was a turbine helicopter, a jet, in other words. And it was very slick. It was the top of the line, very comfortable, quiet helicopter. And being a turbine, those engines are extremely reliable. I mean, they don't quit. They're very simple, and they're powerful, they're light. And so he had the best. I mean, that was a very good helicopter. And if you're going to travel in a helicopter, that's what you want to do. You want to be in that.
If suddenly you found in your driveway a big pile of money, and it said on it, congratulations, buy yourself a nice helicopter for WBBZ, so expense was not an issue. What would you buy?
Well, that's a Sikorsky 76. That's a nice helicopter.
Yeah,
or an Augusta. You know, there's a lot of nice helicopters out there. But if
big
I was
money, big
yeah,
money.
Oh, those are very big money. The Robinson that Mark had is on the lower end in terms of expense. That's one of the Cadillacs of helicopters.
How much harder is it? I assume it's harder. To fly a helicopter?
Well, I've got about 3,000 hours in fixed wing and a commercial license and an instrument license. But in helicopters, I've got maybe 15 or 20 hours.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that, because helicopters are not a natural flying machine.
No.
You have to pay attention to helicopters 100% of
like
the time.
Like a motorcycle, where you got both hands and both feet working.
You're not going to take your mind off of flying with a helicopter. I mean, with my very first lesson in an aircraft, in a fixed wing, the instructor looked at me and he said, okay, take your hands off of the wheel, off of the control yoke, and just sit there with your arms crossed and your legs flat on the floor. And he did the same thing. And we were sitting there, and the plane was trimmed and flying itself. Now, and then he said, okay, now lean forward. And we both leaned forward, and then the nose went down. And he said, okay, and it started to go down. And then he said, okay, now lean back. And we both leaned back, and the nose came back up, and it was flying level again. And it's a very natural flying machine, okay? With a helicopter, you can't do that.
No.
You cannot do that. With a helicopter, you have to concentrate. And if they don't have dampeners, it vibrates a lot. That's why it was so hard to take pictures out of a helicopter. It's like being in an egg beater. It just vibrates tremendously. And it's just not a fun aircraft to fly. It's very versatile. You could do a lot with it, but it's just not fun.
One final question. Let's see. We got only a couple of minutes left. This is great, though, Phil. It's really, really good. When would you use an auto rotation? I've explained before on the air about what an auto rotation is, so assuming some people remember what I said, when would you use that? How far, how high would you have to be? And
well, there's an arc that they have in the instruction manual that tells you if you've got forward momentum and altitude, it all goes into the calculation. If you've got forward momentum, then you've got air going through the rotors
right.
in one way, and so you've got more leeway. You've got more energy, if you will, to use. And it's all energy going through those rotors. The more altitude you have, the more energy you can use because as you go down, there's air going through those rotors. And as long as you keep that rotor going around, that's the energy that's going to keep you from hitting hard.
And generally, when would you pull that whatever you have to pull?
It's a collective.
Okay,
yeah.
When would you have to pull? How far above the ground would you be normally?
Fairly low, because then that's the final, cushion to keep you from hitting hard.
Oh, man. Hey, Phil, I cannot tell you how much I learned, and I'm sure the audience did too. I implore you to put together a panel on WBBZ and do the same thing we're doing, except with more people.
Well, I'd like you to come on my show sometime. And
Phil, people will think you're smart. Because you are. I did not know. Wow, it blew me away. We'll be back after the break on News Radio 930 WBN.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.